Now, the Ian Jessup Show.
Welcome back. You recall the BC Liberal government mandated just after a couple of years after it was elected in 2001 that BC Hydro could not create any new power except Site C, and forced it to buy all its new power from private companies referred to as independent power producers. And Hydro is paying through the nose for that power, power it doesn't need. It's a policy that has forced up Hydro rates for residential customers and added greatly to the debt of BC Hydro. Our regular guest has been looking at the records of BC Hydro for the past 20 years. And joining us is Norm Farrell, author of the blog Insights. Norm, good to talk to you again.
Hi, Ian. It's good to be back.
Now, it was an eye-opener to read on your blog that last year, independent power producers in BC were paid $672 million above the market price. Tell us about that.
Well, the market price in the Pacific Northwest is established by the Mid-Columbia rate, published by the U.S. Energy Department. And I went through the recent prices and calculated in Canadian dollars what those would be. And then I looked at what BC Hydro was paying for the power to the independent power producers. And the difference was very substantial. If BC Hydro had been acquiring the amount of power that they've taken from the IPPs, they would have paid about $545 million. Instead, they paid over $1.2
million.
The difference is
$1.2 billion.
Sure. Yeah, of course. Yeah. The difference is $672 million. That's the premium between what they paid the IPPs and what they've paid, what they could have paid had they bought that power on the open market. Now, I will say that had BC Hydro been looking for that amount of power steadily out of the Pacific Northwest, they would have probably paid more, because we're going on the basis of prices that are established without that extra demand. But nevertheless, it seems to me that there's no good business reason at all to have contracted for huge quantities of power from the independent power producers and rising amounts. That's the really troubling thing. So we were going along up until the Liberals came into office, buying power from Kamano and some other sources, and paying somewhere around $100 million a year for that independent power. We're now up close to a $1.3 billion purchase level. And the fact is that despite the fact that we've increased these purchases from the IPPs, we've had no increase over the last 10 years in domestic demand. Now, what's really troubling is that there's additional projects coming on stream. So the people that are putting the independent power facilities together are confident that they're going to be selling this power to BC Hydro, even though the market conditions suggest there's absolutely zero need for it. And I think, you know, there's one example on the Seychelles Peninsula. There's Narrows Inlet projects that are underway now. And they're involved, they're well along in their construction, preparations for construction, despite the fact they don't have all the approvals in place. But they have obviously a great deal of confidence in getting the deal done with BC Hydro. Now, on that particular case, I have a source that's given me an interesting bit of information, is that the BC government officer who is responsible for the environmental assessment of that particular project was traveled while she was doing that work to California to address the California Senate, espousing the virtues of BC's run of the river, or often called ruin of the river projects. She was telling them how green these projects were and how much they deserve to get paid premium rates. Well, to me, that's an incredible conflict of interest, that somebody who's charged with the responsibility of evaluating a project is out on another part of her duties trying to improve or trying to publicize these things and encourage the extra development of that work. So it's clear that the provincial government has strategies that are quite different than what would be dictated by the public interest.
You know, Norm, for years, BC Hydro was chugging along as a very well-run corporation, and despite the fact that a lot of times it had, as its CEO, the head of the corporation, political appointees. But it was a very successful corporation, and Rafe Mayer will confirm it was considered to be the crown jewel of crown corporations in British Columbia. Then everything changed when Gordon Campbell came into power and introduced his Clean Energy Act, which said that Hydro couldn't produce its own power with the exception of Site C. It had to buy it from the independent power producers. Now British Columbia, BC Hydro, owes these independent power producers $69 billion in contractual obligations. That's for power we don't need, and money that could have been spent on health care, education, seniors' benefits, a whole host of programs. Instead, it's going to the power companies. To the best of your knowledge, is the government still entering into contracts with these companies?
Well, clearly they are, because there are a number that are coming that are in the development stream right now. And so the expectation is that they will be contracted. So these people are talking with government on a regular basis. They're not putting equipment in the field. They're not spending the huge sums of money that they are without certainty that they're going to have their contract to sell that power. So it's pretty clear that, and you just have to look at the rising purchases of power as well. You know, the numbers of gigawatt hours that we're buying out of the independent power producers just makes no sense, given that our domestic demand has been absolutely flat over the last 10 years. Now, there's one other factor is that BC Hydro has, despite their public relations campaigns, they've never had an effective campaign to reduce consumption and to encourage efficiency. There are technological advances over the last few years that have make it possible to save huge amounts of money by re-equipping the marketplace with high-efficiency motors. Most of the power that we use in the both domestic and commercial power facilities is done to drive motors for air conditioning, heating, and so on. And there have been terrific advances in terms of the efficiency available there. We could spend $1 billion encouraging higher efficiency in BC, in British Columbia, in the use of power, and that would save more power than Site C will create, despite the fact that it's going to end up costing between $12 and $17 billion.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Site C, because it's estimated at $8.8 billion, and you say how much is it going to cost in your estimation?
Well, according to the Oxford University study of budget overruns, it's going to cost between $12 and $17 billion in the end. So yeah, That's a terrific increase in debt that Hydro is going to put forward, and it's going to result in dramatic increases to the rates. Now, the other thing that's working here is that BC Hydro has been deferring expenses. I think it's now deferred more than $5.5 billion in expenses. These have to come out of the system at some point. The Liberals don't want them coming out prior to the next election, so they're talking about another 4% increase in rates. But the if any accountant or economist looks at the BC Hydro financial statements, they will quickly come to the conclusion that we need a much, much larger increase in power rates over the next 10 years if we're going to stop playing accounting games.
Now, you say $5.5 billion in deferred expenses. Now, you're an accountant. Can you explain that to me so I can understand?
Well, they've spent money on various things, and they also have they have something they call rate smoothing, where they say that expenses that they incur today will not be recognized until sometime in the future, and that is to avoid having to increase the rates today. Now, of course, you can only do that so long, and at some point you have to pay the piper, and so the rates will be substantially more later on. I looked at their most recent quarterly financial statements, and they declared a profit, but in order to have that profit showing on the books, they had to capitalize a whole bunch of interest costs. In other words, assign it to particular projects, some of the cost of debt that they've incurred, and they deferred a bunch, over $100 million worth of additional expenses. So if you were doing a much simpler accounting system without all these deferral accounts and without trying to push off certain kinds of interest and finance costs onto capital projects so you don't have to recognize them as part of today's operations, they would have lost money. And despite that, the government is still counting on BC hundreds of millions of dollars for the BC Hydro revenues to be able to go out and declare that they have a surplus. It's a phony surplus.
Norm Farrell is our guest. He's the author of the blog Insights. So welcome your calls. We'll take a break and come back. Welcome back. Norm Farrell is our guest, the author of the blog Insights. Norm, we have a full board here. People want to speak to you. Let's go to the first caller in Graham. Hi, Graham.
Good afternoon, and Norm, this has been a concern for some time when I first heard about it some years ago, and just wondering who these individuals are that are benefiting so nicely and how this whole policy was set forward to put the screws to the residents and taxpayers within BC, and I'd like to know the names of the individuals and corporations, and also dismiss of something similar to what used to happen when the World Bank would go in cahoots with the corporations, countries like Ecuador, and set up these large projects, then bankrupt the company, and then take them out for a song or demand that they sell the resources back to them for under market value. So I do have some strong concerns, and also how can we as residents, taxpayers, get a proper investigation done into really what is the end game here and who is going to benefit in the end? Certainly it's not going to be us.
Okay, thanks, Graham. I appreciate it. I'm not sure whether you can give us the names, because there are many, many, many companies involved.
Yeah, and many of them are owned outside of British Columbia.
Yeah.
The way the routine worked in many of the projects was that there were local people who had good political connections that set the deals in motion, and then they ended up selling out once they got the contract fees, and these incredible contracts that run for decades that have guaranteed profits with no concern about market value of the product being delivered. They sold those contracts off to big companies, some of the largest companies in the world, like General Electric, and they walked away with huge dollars in very short periods. The promoters of these projects are not the kind of people who want to run these projects, so their profit was made from the deal making. They get the deals done, and then they sell them off to operators. And those operators are people that are already in the business and are taking a long term. Where we really got stung was in filling the pockets of the people that were involved in these flips.
Okay, let's take the next caller in, Larry. Hi, Larry.
Hey, Ian. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Good afternoon, Norm.
Hi.
The questions the other fellow just asked, Matt, and your answers back there kind of answer to me what I was going to ask for,
okay,
and so on. But, this goes back to, I think, to when Gordon Campbell was in power. He agreed to sell these side-let power things on the river there and that, and it seems to me like it was, did we ever get the money out of California for the hydro we sold them? And so on, and maybe this was the thing to kind of smooth that up and let these guys all take a chunk of the money out of the BC Hydro.
Okay, thanks, Larry. I'll have Norm.
So there was a period of time when British Columbia had quite a bit of surplus capacity and was selling that into the U.S. markets. It was also at a time when the U.S. markets were in disarray. They were being disrupted. Everybody will remember the Enron frauds that occurred. Those people moved on, and many of them work for Kinder Morgan now, and they're still in the game of screwing the or doing something to the public. Anyways,
you can say that today, Norm. Yeah.
Okay. I think that when Gordon Campbell looked at the independent power situation, he assumed that they were going to be able to sell this power at high prices into California, except that technology changed, and there's been a huge increase in the generation capacity through some of the alternative means. Like, there's a lot of wind power, there's geothermal, and various kinds of small stream power that's coming on in California in particular. Solar is taking off. So the market's changed, and what looked to be a good deal when Gordon Campbell was thinking about it back in the early 2000s has turned into a bad deal because technology changed. And that explains why Site C is such a bad deal. We don't have any need for the power today. Even the Liberals admit that. They're saying, well, we'll need it sometime in the future. But, of course, that ignores the fact that there are all kinds of other possibilities, including geothermal and solar, that would be less harmful to the environment.
Okay, we have a couple of callers. Let's try and squeeze them in before we run out of time here. Ron, you're up.
Yes, thank you very much. Will McMartin on April the 12th, 2010, had a TIE article that revealed that there were 14 IPP firms that had made in total contributions of $385,000 to the BC Liberals, and that all in all told from the period 2005 to 2010, these companies made at least 165 different cash gifts to the BC Liberals. The largest one was Plutonic Power that contributed $135,000. And among those who contributed from Plutonic Power were three BC Liberal ex-ministerial aides who also made personal donations in addition.
Ron, you got a question? I'm almost out of time here, and I got another caller.
Is there up-to-date information on how much is going on in terms of contributions?
I'll tell you, Ron, the money that's going across above the table is one thing, but I worry about money that's being passed under the table.
Okay, thank you, Ron. Next caller is Seth. Hi, Seth.
Hey.
Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, David Haslam, he's the communication director for the Energy and Mines Ministry. He just told us last week that Site C is the cleanest option for generating electricity in BC other than nuclear power, which is, of course, banned in BC. And, you know, he's completely right, of course. They announced Site C. Korea was announcing the completion of a nuke plant that's six times the power output for the same cost as what they announced it at. And speaking of new tech, Canada is a world leader, the world leader in producing the thorium reactor. We have a company called Terrestrial Energy, which is financed and on the go, just got licensed from Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission to produce a plant for 2021, a half cent a kilowatt hour is the cost predicted.
Okay, thanks, Seth. I appreciate it. Do you have any comment, Norm?
Well, I just had a conversation with an Iranian physicist the other day, and he had some interesting things that were along that same line, saying that the technology that's going to change in the next 20 years is going to amaze people.
I have an email here from Walter, who says, given the level of corruption of the provincial Liberals that we as taxpayers have endured over the years, is there any evidence that the new digital hydro meters were necessary, or does that tie into the increasing rates being charged?
I've always believed that the smart meters were part of a plan to go to time of use billing, where they'll charge us more to use power at 5 o'clock than they will at 10 o'clock. And there's an argument that actually makes sense.
Yeah. Norm, good to talk to you again. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thanks.
Bye. Norm Farrell, when we come back after the news, we'll have a chat about salmon farming.